the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Hello again, everybody. James Edwards here. It is Saturday, November 7th, and I'm in a particularly good mood tonight. The reason for that being, I am out of town at a speaking engagement. This is normally the part of the show here at the very kickoff where I would tell you that we are coming to you live from AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee. That's our flagship station, our home studios, and to be sure, they are broadcasting the show tonight, except we're not there live. I am in a hotel room in Nashville, Tennessee, from the birthplace of rock and roll. 200 miles down the road I go to the home of country music. Had an opportunity to give a speech today on behalf of the program to a Council of Conservative Citizens meeting. Of course, you'll remember back in June, we had a great live broadcast from the National Conference of the CFCC this year in Jackson, Mississippi. But I'm up here in Nashville tonight meeting some great people, some enthusiastic supporters of this radio program, and also some very good friends in the crowd today. Gordon Baum, of course. Sam Dixon is here. Paul Fromm, Merlin Miller. Ron Garcia Quintana, this is a gentleman who is going to be on the program tonight. He is a political pollster. He does polls and runs campaigns. He's a campaign manager, and he wins. He is a winner. He has won elections for his candidates from the federal level on down to the local grassroots level. He has worked for Ronald Reagan. When I say he worked for Reagan, I'm not talking about he put up a couple of yard signs and said, "I worked for Ronald Reagan." I mean, this man spent 5 years in Washington working for Ronald Reagan. This is the kind of caliber of guest we bring to you each week on the Political Cesspool. He will be on a little bit later tonight during the third hour. Gordon Baum, the CEO of the Council of Conservative Citizens, will be my guest during the second hour. But before we get to those featured guests, I want to introduce my co-host this evening, my good friend and compatriot, Keith Alexander, who is back at home in Memphis tonight. Keith, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood here in Memphis. There is a beautiful, sunny clear, balmy day today.
Absolutely, and it's just the same up here in Nashville. One of the most beautiful and enjoyable days I can remember in a long, long time. Perfect temperature, great fall weather, and I guess that, in addition to everything else I just mentioned, has gotten me in a particularly good temperament tonight, and I'm sure we're going to ruin it by talking about all the issues that we have to address each week on this program. But with that being said, we do have a jam-packed show tonight. We're not going to have nearly enough time to cover everything, so let's get to work right away. And without further ado, Keith, there was obviously some elections that were held last week, elections in which the GOP made a couple of strides. Now, I have both good and bad feelings about this, and I had issued, obviously, a blog posting about the matter on our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, and in it I said pretty bluntly and directly, I don't think it's a big deal. I don't think it's good news for anyone concerned about the direction that America is heading in, that the Republicans were able to win a couple of seats here, because as we've established on this show and as most honest observers will agree, both the Democrats and the Republican Party are at war with conservatism. They're at war with European Americans, and they want to see our way of life destroyed. The only disagreement that they have on a federal level, now there are good local grassroots Republicans still out there, but on the federal level, the only disagreement that they have is how to bring it about. The Republican Party favors essentially our cultural eradication and genocide just as much as the Democrats do. They just think it should be done without raising taxes. But Keith, what's your take on it? I mean, I think it is encouraging. I was blasted by one of our listeners on the blog, and he says, you know, we're too negative. This is something that we should be very ecstatic about. It shows that in states such as Virginia, a state that Obama carried last November, that, you know, they could go back in and elect a Republican governor, shows that the tides are shifting again, and I agree with him on that, but I say if the best we can do to muster up an opposition is to go and elect a Republican over a Democrat, we're really not gaining any ground.
No, I agree. Really, the most encouraging development in this last election cycle that I can point to is the Dan Hoffman intervention in that race up in upstate New York for U.S. congressperson. What it shows is that I think that I'm guardedly optimistic that the public is now waking up and they don't want to vote for a liberal, whether he has Democrat or Republican after his or her name. And that's definitely a hopeful sign. I think that, you know, they would rather lose and vote for a conservative than win and get another rhino in there as a Republican. And, you know, that's the type of awareness that we need. We need to, you know, conservatism has to have, true conservatism has to have a voice in this government. And, you know, as you point out so often, you know, it's just a difference between how fast you want to go to hell in a handbasket. You want to go in second gear with the Republicans, or do you want to go in overdrive with the Democrats? But I think another thing that came from this is that I think people are finally awakening to the fact that the left is not comprised of people of goodwill that just want to fine-tune or tweak the American system so that they can make it fairer or more just. These are people that hate America's traditions, hate its white Anglo-Saxon Protestant origins, and they want to destroy America. And I think that's beginning to dawn on the public when they consider the consequences of Obamacare, cap-and-trade legislation, the Kyoto Protocols, and this Copenhagen conference that Obama's going to attend. We could basically lose our American standard of living and our sense of prosperity, and that, quite frankly, is what gets people's attention, James.
Well, Keith, those are outstanding issues. These are issues that we need a remedy on. But I think if you look at all of the issues throughout the political spectrum, and you want to find one issue where you said, if we could just turn the tide on this issue, things might turn around and become a little better for us overnight. I think that issue has to be immigration. Any political party, Republicans, Democrats, Constitution Party, Libertarian, whatever, that isn't making their number one priority to seal the borders and stop all immigration, both legal and illegal, and round up and deport the tens of millions of illegal aliens, if a party isn't willing to go out on record and say that in so many words, then they are your enemy. And the sooner people find that out, the better. The Republicans are not going to do it. They want amnesty. Bush wanted amnesty just as badly.
The problem is that both groups are globalists. And as globalists, they are the exact opposite, the 180 degrees away from constitutionalists. And that's what all good conservatives, at least in America, are. We believe in the Founding Fathers. We believe in that we have a constitutional form of government, and the Constitution is a rule book, and you can't vary from the rule book.
And I'm not
Nancy Pelosi made that comment, you know, when somebody said, do we have the constitutional authority to have nationalized health care? And she was incredulous. She said, are you kidding? See, that's a teachable moment for people. That shows you exactly what the left thinks of our Constitution. They think it's a scrap of paper to be dispensed
with. Right, obviously, if they think it's a scrap of paper, that's better than what George Bush thinks it is. But let me say this.
maybe it's a scrap of toilet paper, but at any rate, you know, the Constitution is the perfect blueprint for having the appropriate type of government, a limited government. That's what our forefathers and our founding fathers had in mind for us.
You're not going to find any Republicans that are going to go on record and say that, at least not on the federal level, not that I've seen. The guys in the Republican Party that got elected last week, I'm not seeing any of them taking a strong stand on immigration. And as we've said before time and time again on this show, you can't have a first-world nation with a third-world population. And the Republicans better start making that their motto, or they're going to continue to lose the strife.
Well, you know, it is really important for the Republicans, because the only demographic category they can rely upon to vote for them are white.
Quite frankly,
white Gentiles are the ones that they depend on entirely, almost, to win. You know, it's like Pat Buchanan said, go hunting where the ducks are. They've had no luck whatsoever in transforming blacks or Hispanics into Republican voters. And they better wake up and grab the life preserver while they can, because they're about to go under for the third time, I'm afraid.
The only people that vote Republican are the only people that the Republicans fail to cater to. And I'm not one of these guys that say you have to agree with the candidate on every issue. I mean, a lot of conservatives do that. They break ranks because there's one or two areas of disagreement with a certain candidate or an organization or a spokesman or a leader or whatever. I'm not one of those guys, but I'm not seeing much in these Republicans. Is it a little bit better that they didn't elect a Democrat? Maybe, but it's not anything that leads me to believe that we're turning the tide, politically speaking, at the ballot box to restore the Republic and to restore the American experiment. But we are going to talk later with Ron Garcia Quintana. This is a guy, he's a proven winner, and he's one of our people. He's a nationalist. He is a true paleoconservative. He is an America firster. He's going to be on during the third hour. It's going to be very interesting to see what his prescription is for us turning the tide at the ballot box and how he thinks we should go about doing that. I know we're coming up on a break here at any moment, but when we come back, we've got much more to talk about. There were some election results, at least one, that I did take a lot of hope in, and it came from Maine, of all places. We're going to go there right after this.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone, on the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. It is Saturday evening, November 7th, and we are now in what is officially our sixth year on the radio. We celebrated, of course, quite famously, I think, our five-year anniversary, half a decade in this business, ladies and gentlemen. We celebrated that back the week before Halloween on this show. That was our anniversary special, and now here we are in November, a new month, as we head into a new year
like
of broadcasting here in the political cesspool. And, of course, you're listening to us tonight, courtesy of the Liberty News Radio Network and their AM-FM affiliates across the country, our home station, AM 1380 in Memphis. You're on the Internet at libertynewsradio.com or our website. You can tune in there also and have access to our broadcast archives, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Anyway, you're tuned in. We're happy to have you and thankful that you think enough of us to tune in. And I had the opportunity today some very incredible people. I'm sitting here tonight, not from our studio office, but from a hotel room in Nashville in the Opryland district, and have the opportunity to meet with some fans of this program who just really gave us, I think, perhaps undue praise and credit for their evolution in the political activism. But to see people come up and tell you face-to-face how much our work means to them, how much we've impacted their lives for good, and that they are active in politics because of the example that we've set, and you know, to ask to have their pictures taken with you, it's all quite humbling. And we are very much here, and we realize we're here because of the generosity of those in our listening audience, and we love you very much, ladies and gentlemen. But getting back to the topics of the day, Keith and I were covering some ground in the first segment. We've got much more ground to cover this evening, of course. We're going to talk about the vote that happened in Maine. Now, Maine, like California, these are two very liberal states now. They didn't used to be, especially California. That was a Reagan state. But now they are very liberal states. And, in fact, California especially, a bellwether state for any depraved, progressive, egalitarian movement now. You know, California's the bellwether. California rejected sodomite marriage not long ago, and then just last week, the blue state, one of the bluest of blues, the state of Maine, rejected, and yet again, another public ballot, said, no, we don't think that two men or two women should be allowed to marry. We don't think that that's marriage at all, is what they said, and Maine continued the trend. Every time homosexual marriage, quote-unquote, has been put on a ballot in this country, it has failed, and it has failed quite radically in the South, but even in the liberal states, it has failed also. Every state where the people have had a chance to vote, it has failed. And what happens after that?
Well,
one or two liberal judges, literally one or two liberal judges, or maybe a governor or a couple of perverts in the state legislature, they'll get something drafted up, and they will arbitrarily and effectively overrule the will of the entire voting public of their respective state. And it could very well happen in Maine. Maine passes a ballot public referendum saying we don't want homosexuals to have the right to marry. And Keith, what do you think is going to happen after that?
Well, I'm sure they have a couple of Harvard or Yale-educated Supreme Court justices on the Supreme Court of Maine. So you're right, that's very likely to happen. But you know, just think about this. Maine is not only one of the bluest of blue states, it's one of the whitest of white states. I think only North Dakota has a higher percentage of its population white than Maine does. And it's also a blue state. You know, blue states are basically the projection in blue states are states at the most elementary level that vote Democrat in presidential elections. Red states vote Republican in presidential elections. But if you look at a map of the United States, all the blue states are on the eastern seaboard in the upper Midwest and the left coast. The great heartland of America is more or less red states. The geographic mass of the United States is red states. And these blue states are the projection into the present day of the outlook of the abolitionist, Unitarian, Transcendentalist Northeast, while the red states are the projection of the mindset, you know, into the present day of the old Confederacy. And the reason the West is like that is because the West was settled by white Southerners. That's why all the cowboys and all these old movies that you watch spoke with a Southern accent. And what this is a hopeful sign. It shows that the vast majority of Americans are inalterably opposed to this type of liberal transformation that, you know, the bigwigs in New York, the left coast media moguls, the elite want to foist upon us. Everybody is opposed, and it is a terrible indictment of our government and our, elites at this time that the popular will means nothing when you get right down to it. They're just, you know, steamrolling over it, aren't they, James?
Well, and what I fear is going to happen, Keith, is what happened in the 1960s. You know, nobody wanted forced integration, you know, at the point of a bayonet, and that forced upon people what they didn't want for their children, and yet it happened because of a few, once again, liberal justices.
In strategic positions. It's a conspiracy against the public will.
Well, it is, and what I fear will happen is that, once again, in Maine and in these other states that are taking the righteous stand against sodomy and against homosexual marriage, that, look, our people have to work for a living. We don't have the time to be welfare recipients who are de facto political operatives 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because they don't have to go to work. The government, you know, they're living off the government tip. And we have to go to work. We have to provide for our families. We don't have the time to do this, you know, around the clock. And what could happen quite easily, and we've already seen it happen in states like Iowa and others, you know, a radical judge decides that they're going to, you know, the will of the people be damned, this is going to be the law because this is what, you know, cultural Marxism wants, this is how we're going to appease the gods of political correctness, and the people, you know, hoot and holler and say, that's not right, that's not fair, we voted on it, the electorate, the citizenry didn't want it, but they have no recourse, and let's face it, once again, they've got to go to work the next day, so they're going to keep going to work, they're going to be mad about it, and in a generation, it'll be settled in, and it'll be accepted. That's what happened in the Civil Rights Movement. That's what could happen here, unless we do what, Keith?
Unless we grab control of the reins of government, unless we just tell them that we're not going to put up with it. You know, I don't know where it's all going to lead, but we've got to stop being so tranquil in the face of this judicial tyranny. And, you know, it's very telling that, you know, I remember on the Cesspool blog the other day, we had a list of the new you could pull up the National Republican Party blog, and on that website, who is the judge? One of the few white faces on their gallery of Republican heroes. It was Frank Johnson, who was just exactly this type of usurper of power through the power of judicial review that we're complaining about right now. He was set up in Birmingham as a U.S. District Judge, and he voted for affirmative action for staffing the Highway Patrol in Alabama, as well as a lot of other liberal enormities during the Civil Rights Movement. And the Republican Party, rather than castigating him or putting him in the Rogues Gallery, puts him in the Hall of Fame. That tells you what type of Republican Party we've got now.
Yeah, the Republican Party now is criminally corrupt. Once again, I say with an asterisk by the expression, on the federal level, there they're hopeless. I mean, they're just, it's not a party for conservatives at all anymore.
Well, the left takes over everything. But the other part of this, the other part of the equation, although the left can seem to co-opt and take everything over, once liberalism gets something in its dead and embrace, it kills it. That's what it's done to Protestant mainline churches, and that's what it's done to the news media, and that's what it's doing to the Republican Party.
We'll be back with more right after this.
Successful guys. We'll be back right after these messages. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Big girls don't cry. Welcome back to the show, everyone. I have told you a couple of times before that I'm in Nashville tonight. I've been extremely and tremendously blessed to have been able, over the course of the past 5 years, the past two or three years specifically, or particularly, I should say, after the show's popularity has exploded, to have traveled across the country on behalf of this program and give talks and presentations and to meet the fans of this show face-to-face. I had one interesting exchange today with a gentleman who said, I used to write your show because I hated it. The more I listened to you, the more I began to agree, and I just want you to know that I'm here today because of you. You changed me, and now I'm active for the right cause, and there is no more moving experience than hearing something like that and meeting people who you possibly positively impacted. And it's great to be here in Nashville tonight with the Council of Conservative Citizens. Keith Alexander back home in Memphis, and Keith and I read the paper in Memphis, never short on topics for us to dissect here on the program each Saturday evening. Keith, there was a pretty interesting story in the paper. I guess it was Friday. Why don't you break that down for the crowd?
Well, you know, the name of this segment originally was Behind Enemy Lines, and what we typically do is break down seemingly neutral events that happen, as reported by the newspaper, the news media, the broadcast media, or whatnot, and unpack them and let you know what their significance is and how they fit into this culture war scenario. Well, in Memphis, we had a black mayor since 1991. And this black mayor, being a dedicated practitioner of blackness, decided that every good-paying job that was available in his administration by the city of Memphis would have to be staffed with a black person, including the animal shelter. So he gets a black guy to come in and get probably a six-figure job for being the head of the animal shelter and various sub-shelters that we have around the city. And, of course, the guy has no empathy whatsoever for the dogs or the cats that are in there. He just wants to draw a paycheck. And it comes to light when the old mayor goes out and the new mayor comes out, another black guy, by the way, but at least of a higher caliber than the one we had before. Dogs and cats are starving, dying of dehydration, they're being tortured, stuff like this. They're putting sick animals together with well animals. And, of course, this causes a tremendous public outcry from a lot of East Memphis housewives and people like that who show up for a candlelight vigil, and they're just, you know, it's just like the peasants with pitchforks, Pat Buchanan said. They're up here saying, fire Ernie Alexander. That's the name of this black guy that they had in charge of the animal shelter.
No relation to our Keith Alexander.
Right, yeah, at least none I know of. I'm sure that, in fact, you know, he had to go all the way out to the West to find this guy. But, you know, he's gonna have a black guy in there by hook or crook.
Yeah, you know, there weren't enough blacks in Memphis to put as head of the animal shelter. He had to go to Albuquerque, New Mexico and recruit this cat. But nevertheless, so the guy gets in, the animals are mistreated, big story comes out. And listen, I don't want to see any animals mistreated. I don't want dogs to suffer or go dehydrated or be euthanized, out of hand. But here's the thing about the story. I mean, on one hand, it just proves the you know, once again, the failure in leadership that that we've come to know in Memphis, and that you would come to expect from such caliber of people. But secondly, if you're looking for a righteous cause, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, I think we, all things being equal, we have more serious concerns, you know, than a stray dog not having enough water. Now, I don't want to see the dog go malnourished, but what's more cause for a concern and outcry? There were people there, and if you don't believe me, go to the Commercial Appeal website and pull up. This was the front page story above the fold on Friday. People, you know, the candlelight vigil, they were just mourning and wailing over these animals' mistreatment. You know, civil rights for animals, one sign read. Justice for the innocent, another sign read. I mean, this is something that really animates and motivates our people to go to bat. I mean, they're going to organize. By God, they can organize.
And of course, the crowd was almost 99% white.
They can protest and they can stand together in unison. But try to get them to stand together when their own child, and this was an all-white crowd, by the way, over 100 people in this Commercial Appeal picture, you know, rallying against the animal shelter head honcho. You know, they can, and it was an all-white crowd. But try to get them to rally together when their son, you know, scores infinitely higher on the SAT and is passed up for a scholarship by a minority student who scored far less, or they're denied a promotion at the workplace because of affirmative action. Where is the white outcry? Where are the candlelight vigils for these victims of affirmative action, these victims of diversity and multiculturalism? Why can't we unify and speak out in outrage against some of the most egregious examples of heinous actions that befall our people? Why are we more concerned with the salvation of an obscure species of fern? Why is this something that can get our people animated, but some of these other issues can't? Keith, I can't answer that question.
Well, it bespeaks of the altruism of white people. You know, and they are, you know, they'll mobilize and organize and fund anything for anyone or anything except their own kind. In other words, the left has done a perfectly thorough job of brainwashing these people. And we just, you know, I'd like to see dogs and cats be the subject of charitable largesse. It's great, you know, dogs, you know, a dog is a wonderful thing. You know, a bum on the street can have a dog, and in the eyes of his dog, he's the king of the world. And I've seen that before, and it's a touching thing, and I hate to see dogs or cats or any other pet mistreated. But where is the feeling, where is the awareness of what's happening to the white race? We're being dispossessed. We have all of these charities to provide scholarships and tutoring and help to help minorities, particularly black minorities here in Memphis, displace white people. You know, it's part of the left's cultural Marxist plan to end the white male hegemony. And where are some of these people? I think there was one black person in that crowd, and they made sure that they interviewed her on the 10 o'clock news.
Well, you know,
but where is somebody coming forward to provide scholarships, to provide tutoring, to provide help to poor and working class white kids who are smarter than upper class white kids? You know, there is I read a Richard Lynn paper, and it's documented fact that white kids from families that make less than $10,000 a year score higher on the SAT and the ACT than black kids who come from families that earn over $100,000. What's happening to these kids down there at the $10,000 level? They're totally without resource or refuge. No charities whatsoever. No scholarship funds. Zilch. Nada. Nothing.
And it's not to say that we're against benevolence for people other than our own kind. I mean, certainly that's not the case at all. But as we've said time and time again, the eternally wise statement from the Greeks, all things in moderation, even a virtue when carried to the extreme is going to be damaging for any society, and certainly our own benevolence and altruism has begun to work against us, and incredibly so.
Well, see, we've been totally cut. You know, we've made this point many times before, how all the charities in Memphis, for example, that used to provide scholarships generally, they provide these scholarships exclusively for the benefit of black kids now in Memphis. There's not a centavo available for white kids.
Well,
so if you can't afford your own way to college, you're SOL, out of luck.
The stigma exists that if you do anything that's construed as being, for lack of a better term, pro-white or pro-European American, pro-European, whatever, there's a stigma of racism and bigotry and extremism attached to it, whereas when you have an organization that specifically and exclusively wants to promote the interest of blacks, BET, NAACP, or Hispanics, La Raza, this is something that is not only seen as healthy but acceptable, but also it is encouraged by everyone to take part in it. That's the double standard. That's absolutely outlandish, the double standard. It's almost incredible that it's allowed to exist, but it does exist, and we're fighting here on this radio program. This radio program serves as a voice for mainstream European Americans and conservatives, and we don't make
it. We need some new charities, James.
We unabashedly admit that. And that's fine. You know, we're entitled to have a voice also, I think, and you're listening to that voice right now.
We need some new charity, James.
We'll be back right after this. TJ, got next question coming up. We're going to go to Fort Hood.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show. We have just one more segment tonight with Keith Alexander before we move on to the second and third hours this evening, which will feature Gordon Baum of the Council of Conservative Citizens and political activist Roan Garcia-Quintana. But, Keith, first, before we go to Fort Hood, you wanted to make a final comment on that previous segment we had.
Right. I want to propose something to our listeners that is kind of radical and revolutionary. If you have some money and you're considering making a charitable donation to any type of group, let me ask that you consider doing something different with your money. Why don't you see if there is a family, a white family, in your circle of acquaintance, where you know people are having a difficult time getting the money to send their children to private school. If they live in a place like Memphis where, for example, the public schools are synonymous with the black schools, help those kids not be sucked into the black hole of Calcutta. Help a family of white people get the money necessary to send their children to college. If you've got some charitable benevolence and some wherewithal, that's what is needed. All these other needs are being met, at least any legitimate needs. It's basically gotten to the point where they're just throwing money down the rat hole, trying to raise up minorities, and there's nothing available for white kids who are poor or middle class or working class. Let's provide some help to our own kind.
Very good, Keith. I appreciate that. Public service announcement brought to you by Keith Alexander and the Political Cesspool. But he's right. He's right, and we should do that because there are no charities that are actively standing up and collecting money for such causes, and there should be.
You see, the Council of Conservative Citizens did this, at least a predecessor organization did. They provided these segregation academies back when they were integrating the schools, low-cost private schools to help white kids avoid all the pathologies associated with attending these newly integrated schools. And I think it's a great idea.
Well, we have a lot of great ideas. Taking them from theory to practice seems to be the sticking point, but we do better than most here in the Political Cesspool, so we'll work on it. I want to talk about, obviously, a subject, an issue that's been talked about by everyone in the media. Normally, we're pretty much a novelty here because we talk about issues from a perspective that no one else on the mainstream airwaves are doing. That's what makes the show so special. That's why we've been able to attain the level of success and publicity in media that we have. But we're going to talk about an issue that everyone's talking about right now. That's the Fort Hood massacre. Terrible tragedy there, goes without saying. We don't want to see that happen to anyone. But without heavily trying to politicize the carnage there, and I think it's a shame when people do so. But you can say that this is just another manifestation of diversity and multiculturalism in action. And I want to say something about the shooter, who was obviously a Muslim. People believe, and to an extent, rightly so, that perhaps our biggest threat right now is a threat that is posed to us by the media, which is obviously run by radical left-wing Zionist extremists. Now, that's true, but they mistakenly go overboard in thinking that Muslims are some sort of ally against these Zionists. To an extent, you could argue that, but it's not really effective historically speaking, because if you go back before the mid to late 1940s, before Israel plopped itself down in the middle of the Muslim land, they were all allies. They were all Semites. They were all allied together against Europeans. And throughout antiquity, you look through history, the pages of history, and you will see that Europeans have consistently had to turn back Muslims' invasions. Charles Martel at Tours, and obviously the Ottoman incursion. Throughout the history of recorded civilization, Muslims have always been opposed to Christianity and to European culture, and that still exists today. I mean, they might not be doing as much damage here in America as the Zionists are when you're talking about media and academia and some of the things that we see first and foremost, but that by no means insinuates that they are an ally. In fact, quite the opposite is true. So, Keith, your thoughts on the whole Fort Hood thing?
Well, let's break it down again. This guy is of Palestinian extraction. Palestinians and Arabs generally and Muslims generally are angry with the United States because we've allowed ourselves to be dominated by Zionists.
Right.
Zionists over here, Zionists who feel a primary loyalty to the State of Israel rather than their actual nation of citizenship,
and
the United States.
And I get that. And, of course, you know, Pat Buchanan said Capitol Hill is Israeli-occupied territory, and, of course, we have essentially built and armed Israel by ourselves, America has, and we almost are their proxy.
In fact, they even had the nerve with the decline of the dollar to ask that all of our massive foreign aid to Israel now be paid in euros. That was a headline. So it shows how loyal they are to the United States. But, you know, again, where did common sense go? Where did racial profiling go? We know where the terrorist threat to America lies now. It lies from Middle Eastern Arab people. We know what they look like. And instead, we act like everybody's equal, there's no problem. Political correctness has dumbed down America to the point that we can't defend ourselves at a major military base against a person who gave all sorts of warning signs that he was anti-American and anti-U.S. military. But, you know, and the result is 13 dead and 31 injured.
Now, you know, Keith, had that been a white shooter, it would have been instantly announced that he was an extremist, that he was a white supremacist, he was this, that, and the other, and perhaps, you know,
a Klan member
people do
or something.
Exist, yeah. Very few and far between, and in fact, I don't think I've ever met one. But if it's a non-white shooter, you know, he's a troubled...
Well, I remember, I'm old enough to remember this, James, I remember when President Kennedy was assassinated, and the left was in a frenzy. They just thought, they were just absolutely certain this was some type of right-wing Klansman that had taken out President Kennedy, and the level of disappointment, the shock, was palpable when they found that it was a left-winger who was a member of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, a communist, a guy that had defected to the Soviet Union and come back, one of their own, in other words. See, they have a certain template, and if the facts don't fit the template, like they don't in this Fort Hood case, they want us all to ignore the facts.
Well, the left is always far more violent than the right. We don't engage in acts of violence. We're a lawful, play-by-the-rules type of people.
Right. And instead, our government tries to say that, you know, this is a terrorist. I remember that missive that went out from some federal agency to the Missouri State Police Department that was intercepted?
Oh, yeah. If you're a Ron Paul supporter, if you believe in the Constitution, you should be profiled as a terrorist, a domestic terrorist, if you're a Ron Paul supporter.
It's almost like Theodore Adorno's track back in the early 50s, The Authoritarian Personality, in which he said anyone that grows up in a deeply Christian home with an intact family with both of his parents is bound to grow up a fascist and a racist.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all that being said, though, I think the final word on it is another manifestation of multiculturalism and diversity in action at Fort Hood, although our hearts and prayers...
Ain't diversity wonderful?
Yeah, it all goes, you know, our hearts and prayers go out with the bereaved. This is a terrible tragedy, and, you know...
And it's pretty obvious, too, by listening to that guy and looking at his history. He didn't get into the military because he wanted to serve. He wanted somebody else to pay his way through medical school.
That's exactly what it said. Yeah, that's absolutely right. But, Keith, we have about 2 minutes left before we have to go to the national news burst and then into the second hour. It's a big football season right now. We're not going to have enough time again to cover this to the extent that I would have liked.
Well, two things.
Before I came on air a few minutes ago, or I guess about an hour ago now, big college football game, LSU versus Alabama. They're playing tonight down there in Alabama. You have a quick story you want to share from
Earlier on this program, we were telling you about MUS, and for people that aren't familiar with Memphis High School football, that stands for Memphis University School, a predominantly white, exclusive, private school that has a football team that's been beating all of these so-called blue-chip inner-city programs of both outside of Memphis and inside of Memphis, where all that black athletes get scholarships and none of the MUS guys do. And, of course, the story is being totally ignored by the local sports press, which is just as leftist and cultural Marxist as the political press. If the roles were reversed, they'd make a Hollywood movie about it, like Glory Road, which was about this, you know, plucky little black team from Texas Western beating the big bad white team from the University of Kentucky in the 1966 NCAA Finals. Now, the other thing, another culture war aspect, it was in the newspaper this week that the new chancellor of Ole Miss, following up on the activities of his predecessor, Robert Kiat, a change agent from Harvard and Yale, who wanted to do away with all the Confederate paraphernalia and symbols of Ole Miss. Apparently they have a song called "With Dixie for Love," from Dixie with Love, that they play at halftime at the football games. And the last part of it goes da 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 da. And apparently people in the stands have been chanting, "The South will rise again." Well, this good liberal card-carrying cultural Marxist chancellor has said, if he hears that again, they're going to drop that song from the repertoire of the Ole Miss band.
Two to go. Stay tuned. Hour number two of the Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
We'll be right back, everybody. Stay tuned.
The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting,
hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.